Okay, so I wanted to skip ahead a little bit. We already discussed a little bit about Daf Beis and Beis with Kapara and Knas and some of the issues that came up in Daf Beis and Beis. Just Gimel and Aleph, just to, I think we summarized basically, but in case we didn't, just to basically summarize what it says up until the Mishnah on the bottom of Gimel and Aleph, is the Gemara has this cryptic phrase that Edom Zomim are Mishalim Lefi Chelko, which means, we don't know what it means, that's why it's cryptic, that's what cryptic means, we're not sure what it means, that Edom Zomim pay based on their portion. So what does that mean there, Mishalim Lefi Chelko? The Gemara has five possibilities of what it means. First possibility is, Mishalim Lefi Chelko means that if, let's say, Edom Zomim testify that a guy owes $200, Edom testify a guy owes $200, and then they're found to be Zomim, so how do you work out the monetary payment of Kasher Zomim? Now these Edom have to pay what? $200 each, or $100 each for a total of $200? So maybe Lefi Chelko means that each one only has to pay $100 to reach the total of $200. The Gemara says, that's great, and that's true, and that's fantastic. In fact, it's so true and so great that it's an explicit Mishnah on Daf Hey. So it's unlikely that Rabbi Yehuda Merav is going to come along and say, I have a great Chiddush. Edom Zomim Mishalim Lefi Chelko. All you have to do is learn a couple of Mishnayos and you already know this halacha. So it can't be that that's what he meant, that that's what Rabbi Yehuda Merav means when he says Edom Zomim Mishalim Lefi Chelko. He must have meant something a little deeper, a little more profound, something a little less obvious. So the second suggestion the Gemara says is, no, what does it mean, Mishalim Lefi Chelko? It means if one of the Edom turns out to be an Eid Zomim and the other doesn't. You have two Edom, and that testify Reuven killed Shimon. Let's say Reuven owes Shimon $1,000. And then two other Edom come and say that one of these Edom, Imanu Yisab, B'makom Ploni, you were with us somewhere else. Now, I don't know about your friend, but you were with us somewhere else. So it's telling us that he has to pay his half, even though the other Eid didn't become an Eid Zomim. Maybe that's what Eid Zomim Misham Lefi Chelko means. The Gemara says, no, that won't work either. Because while that's not obvious, it's wrong. It's not true. The halacha is, an Eid Zomim can only become an Eid Zomim if both guys become an Eid Zomim. If you only turn one of them into an Eid Zomim, Ad Sheyazumu Shneihem, it doesn't work. You need to make both guys into an Eid Zomim. So the Gemara suggests suggestion number three. Rava says, no, the case is, a guy comes into Beis Din and he says, Eidus Sheker Hi Aditi. He admits that he testified falsely. So he's got to pay his portion, since he's the one that admitted that he testified falsely in his Eidus. The Gemara says, no, that doesn't work either, because the rule is, Kivan Shehigid Shuv Eino Chazer Magid. Very important Shas concept. Once a person says Eidus, you can't go around changing it. You get one chance in court. You get to say your Eidus. They warn you in advance. You got to tell the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth. But you have to say your Eidus. You get one chance. If you say your Eidus on Monday, and then you come back on Tuesday and say, oh, I was just kidding yesterday. Really, I meant. And you say something entirely different. That doesn't work. We're not going to believe you, even if you're confessing. You're saying, yesterday I was lying. And you're confessing. You're saying, but there's a confession. Doesn't matter. You don't get another day to speak in court. So the Gemara suggests maybe it's a fourth possibility. Maybe it's two Edom coming and they're saying, or one Edom coming and saying, that me and my friend testified in another Beis Din, and we became Edom Zomim, but then I ran away, and now I'm coming to you, and I'm telling you that I became an Edom Zomim in another Beis Din. So maybe it's saying, Rav Yehuda Merav is telling us, he should pay his portion of that Hazama. Gemara says, no, that's not true either. That can't work either. Because Rabbi Akiva holds, we saw in Daf Beis Amud Beis, that Eid Zomim is Eino Mishalim El Piatzmo. He can't pay based on his own admission. Someone had to have been Mechayev him to pay at some point. It can't just be his payment is because he says he has to pay. Someone had to have Paskin done him that he has to pay. If he ran away from Beis Din as soon as Edom came to make him in a Zomim, and he just ran away before Beis Din ever had a chance to say, you're Chayev to pay, Kasher Zomim, then he's not going to have to pay. And that's how we get to the fifth suggestion. The fifth and final suggestion is Ba'omer hi adnu v'izamnu be'Beis Din ploni v'chuyavnu mamon. He comes into Beis Din and he says, not only were me and my friend Edom Zomim in another Beis Din, but we even stuck around long enough to listen to the Beis Din paskin on us that we have to pay. So now he's not paying al pi atzmo, he's not paying based on his own admission, he's paying based on the psak that was given to him in the other Beis Din. I might have thought that since it's his own admission, and his own admission is not going to be enough to make his friend have to pay, so he shouldn't have to pay either. That's what Rabbi Dom Rav is telling me. Mishalem lufi chelko. He pays based on his chelek. That if he comes to this new bezin and says, me and my friend testified another bezin, we became his own man, and the other bezin told us we have to pay $1,000, $500 each, he's got to pay his $500. The other friend's off the hook because we don't have any evidence that any of this is true, but at least al pio das atzmo, he has to pay his $500. The big question that hovers above this sugya is that there is a concept, forget about kibin shigit shuvin echozer magid, about retelling testimony, there's another concept of ein adam mesim atzmo rasha, that a person is generally not believed to say that he's a rasha. What's he doing over here? He's coming and he's saying that I became an eid zomim in another basement. Isn't that saying that he's a rasha? Yeah.
Also, isn't his eidus on the psak of the basement? So wouldn't that also include what I was saying?
Yeah, but he's not two Edom testifying about the Pesach of the Bezin. He's one Edom testifying about the Pesach of the Bezin, so that's not enough. We need better...
What do we believe? I
mean,
his Edom is
on himself. We believe his own Hoda'ah, that we believe him vis-a-vis himself. That's the Edom that we believe, but we believe him vis-a-vis himself, not vis-a-vis the other guy. I saw that Kasha about, what about in Adam Esam Atzma Rasha? Where did I see it? I saw it somewhere. Yeah, Ritva asked the Kasha, how could the guy be believed to say Edus Shekari Aditi, that I testified falsely, meaning in the case where we reject that answer because we said Kivan Shehigit. But forget Kivan Shehigit. How could he ever be believed in the first place in Adam Esam Asma Rasha? So the Ritva suggests that we're speaking about Achiv Shebegufa. But by Mamon, we would say Palgina Dibure, meaning when do we say in Adam Mesim Asma Rasha? That's if he's if it's something about I was Michal Shabbos, Bolanishus Ish, something like that, something that would create a chiyuv on his guf. But something that's about a monetary payment, he is believed to say, like if a guy comes to Bezin and says, I stole from someone, so what will we tell him? Return the money. Right? What about Ein Adam Mesim Asma Rasha? No, when it comes to money, a guy says, I stole. Now, he doesn't have to pay the knas. Modu b'knas is pater. He doesn't have to pay kefel. He doesn't have to pay dalet vehei. But the original first money, that he for sure, the keren, that he for sure has to pay. If a person says that he took money from someone else, if he's modu that he took ribis from somebody. So he has to, that's money. So he's got to pay it back.
Anywhere where an Eid Echad is going to be Nemash, he's
not going to be believed about himself to say that he's Mechal Shabbos, right? Well, although that's Din in Nefashos. What do you mean? Anywhere an Eid Echad is Nemash, let's say by Kashos, an Eid Echad is Nemash to say that something is kosher, an Eid Echad is Nemash. To testify that someone ate something not kosher, you need to wait.
I testify that I was selling treif meat.
Right.
Is he going to be believed?
In terms of giving him some sort of onesh for that? So, no. But in terms of money that he owes people, if there is money that he owes people, Shulchan Aruch discusses, this unfortunately happens all the time, where we find people who are selling treif meat. Does he owe money to the people that he sold it to? Lemaisa, they ate, they enjoyed, they're full. They would have had to pay for other meat if they didn't have that meat. Do you have to pay them back for it? What would you think? What do you think? You catch a guy selling treif of meat. And for years, and everyone's been having delicious meals. Delicious cuts of meat. They didn't know were possible in the kosher cut of meat. And so do you have to pay them back for it? Shulchan Aruch says it depends how treif it was. It depends if it was an issur d'oraisa or an issur d'rabbanan.
The axe
hit
him in the back of the head.
Then it's an issur d'oraisa. Right? If it's an avela, it's an issur d'oraisa, then you have to pay him back. But if it's nisid rabbanan, then you have to pay him back. Why? Shulchan Aruch says because if it's nisid al raisa, they need a kapara for it. They did something terrible. They ate treif of meat. So you gave them something that is damaging them. You give them poison. But if it's nisid rabbanan, they did a nisid rabbanan b'shogeg. They don't need a kapara for nisid rabbanan b'shogeg. So the Sivis writes in Reish Lamedal in Chashmishpa, they don't need a kapara for something that's Drabanan b'shogeg. and therefore you wouldn't have to pay them back because they filled their stomach, they ate it, and there was no harm, no foul, because they don't need a kapara for what they did, which is a very big chiddush, obviously, that they don't need a kapara for eating Rabban Mishani.
A person will say who testifies that. Is he testifying that, let's say, money, he said, I testify on myself. He's an aid on himself. So is he an aid on himself?
If you're moda that you owe somebody money, so you it's not pitoris edus really. It's just that your moda, your hodah alone gives it.
It's not
that.
The interest,
yeah.
He can't be an edus.
Right. Yeah, it's not midin edus. Certainly not midin edus. He's a karavet alatma also. Okay, now the next little tiny piece with the Mishnah and the little Gemara, I really don't want to get into. If you have like an hour to read Rashi and, you know, try to do all the the calculations over here, that's wonderful. Just tell you what it talks about. It talks about an Eid Zomim who says that a guy divorced, Eidim Zomim, Eidim came, and they said, this fellow Reuven divorced his wife, and he never paid her ksuba. He owes her ksuba. And then it turns out that they're Eidim Zomim. Reuven never divorced his wife. He's still happily married. Or married. Doesn't matter, happily or not. He's still married. So he doesn't owe her ksuba because they never got divorced. Let's say the ksuba is worth $20,000. How much do those Eidim Zomim have to pay? So on the one hand, you'd say $20,000. That's what they were trying to make this guy pay. They were trying to make this Reuven pay $20,000. But on the other hand, wait a second. Were they trying to make Reuven pay $20,000 when in reality he didn't have to pay anything? Not necessarily. Let's say he gets divorced next week. You know what he's going to have to do? Pay $20,000. So what were they trying to do? They were trying to get him paid $20,000 one week earlier than he really had to. Let's say he gets divorced in 10 years. Then they were trying to get him to pay $20,000 10 years earlier than he had to. But ultimately, he would have had to pay it. Or maybe not. Because what if his wife dies first? Then they don't get divorced and his wife dies first. Then he's not going to have to pay it. What if he dies, then he will have to pay it. If he dies first, even if they don't get divorced, then his estate does pay. How do you calculate what they're trying to cost him? They're trying to cost him to pay right now when he might have had to pay anyway, in a day, in a year, in 10 years, in 15 years. We don't know. It's very unclear what would have happened. That's what the Mishnah deals with. How do you calculate that? And essentially what the Mishnah says is that sometimes, and this is true in the financial markets, you could buy a position in the market, which means you're not buying something, you're buying someone's place, someone's rights in a given property or in a given given item. Let's say, for example, you could buy the right to sell gold in 10 years from now at $100 an ounce. What is that doing for you? Well, if it happens to be only $90 an ounce and you have the right to sell it at $100 an ounce, you have a guarantee that someone's going to buy it at $100 an ounce in 10 years, so you're going to make a lot of money. But it could be $110 an ounce in 10 years from now. You don't know. Everything's prospective. What amount of money would a person pay for that position? Meaning, if this woman, let's say, needed some cash now, she needed a new, whatever came out, new iPad came out, new iPhone, and she needs it because people need it. So she needs it now. It's gigantic. It's like an iPad mini, same exact products pretty much, and she needs it now. So she needs money. What's she going to do if she needs money? So she doesn't have anything. And she certainly doesn't have anything she can sell. She's not selling her iPad so she can buy the iPhone. She needs it. So what's she going to do? She'll take her ksuba and say, listen, this thing could be worth $20,000 at some point. I just don't know when. She'll go on eBay. How much are you willing to pay so that you can take my place as the collector of the ksuba whenever it gets paid out? Well, how much would a person be willing to pay for that? I don't know, but there's a market for that. And the market will decide how much a person is willing to pay for that. You may look at her age, her husband's age, their relative health. You'd get an actuary on the job, and they'd figure it out, and they would know exactly what they would pay for something like that. Right? That's what life insurance companies do. That's what they get actuaries, and they figure these things out. That's what they do. So that's the starting point. Question is, once you have that number, someone would be willing to pay her $8,000 for her position in the ksuba. You have that number. So what does that mean exactly? Is that what you pay her? Is that what you pay the husband when you were an eitzomim on the husband's ksuba? Or is it something else? It doesn't make sense that that's what you pay the husband, because that's not what you tried to cost the husband. That would be that, right. That would be her position. So there are three deos in the Gemara exactly how we do that calculation, and it's somewhat complicated to figure out what the deos are. The pashup shot is that one day is you pay the value of the husband's rights. You don't even cheshbon what someone would pay her. It's the value of his rights. Another, because he gets payros from her properties as well. Another one is that you pay the difference between the value of the wife's rights and the full value of the ksuba plus the rights of the payros. And third is just the difference between the value of the wife's rights and the value of the ksuba. Okay, all of that was just to summarize to get us to the next sugya that I wanted to do. I wanted to learn the sugya a little bit of Shemitas Ksafim. Why are we learning the sugya of Shemitas Ksafim? Because this is one of the major sugyas, I mean the big sugya in Shas, Shemitas Ksafim, is the sugya in Gittin, where we talk about Prozbul, how Hillel is misakin the Prozbul. But over here, the Gemara it's a very critical Gemara that relates to Shemitas Ksafim over here as well. So let's start with the Mishnah. Gimel and Aleph at the bottom. Mi'idin anu bishponi shu chayiv l'chaveru elav zuz. They testify that if someone is chayiv to his friend 1,000 zuz, al menas litna mikan v'ashol shem yom. And the due date of this 1,000 zuz, Reuven owes Shimon 1,000 zuz, he has to pay it back in 30 days from now. Now is September 15th. October 15th, the 1,000 zuz is due. The guy says, Reuven says, you're right, I owe 1,000 zuz. You're not telling a lie about that, it's 100% true. But it's not that it's due on October 15th, 2014. It's due October 15th, 2024. So I do owe the 1,000 zuz. Just not in a month from now, in 10 years from now. That's when I owe it, that's when it's due. How do you cheshbon what we're going to make the Edom Zomim pay if these guys turn out to be Edom Zomim? Were they trying to cost him 1,000 zuz? Not really, because he admitted that he owed 1,000 zuz, so they weren't really trying to cost him 1,000 zuz. What were they trying to cost him? They were trying to cost him whatever it's worth to have those 1,000 zuz for an extra 10 years. They were trying to make him give up those 1,000 zuz 10 years earlier than he would have otherwise had to. This is what we call in finance, I was a finance major in college, this is what we call the, did you know? This is what we call the time value of money. What? Rabbi Levin, was he accounting or finance? He was actuary, right. Time value of money. Oh yeah? So this is what we call the time value of money. That having money, having capital, is valuable. And there's a way to cheshbon exactly how valuable it is. Now, typically speaking in halacha, we don't recognize the time value of money to its fullest extent, because time value of money depends on Torah Madah. Come on, time value of money depends on the most important factor to input when you're inputting for the time value of money is the interest rate, and interest is usur. We don't charge interest. So money is very valuable to have because you can lend it and charge interest for it. That's why it's important, you know, that's the way the market runs. So typically speaking, it doesn't have the value on that level, but on the other hand, forget about interest. If I can hang on to money for 10 years with zero interest, so the value of that money is flipped onto me, meaning I'm able to invest in a new business. I might open up a new business that's going to make me millions of dollars, where without that capital for those 10 years, I would not have been able to invest in this business because I would have had to save every last penny to pay it back in 30 days. So there is some value in being able to hang on to that money for 10 years. How do we cheshbon what they were trying to make the guy lose? Omdin kama odom rotze litein v'yu biyado elav zuz v'nosim ikan v'yadam yom v'nosim ikan v'yadam yom. How much would an average person want to pay, be willing to pay, to hang on to the money for an extra 10 years? Now, halakhically, how much are you allowed to pay to hang on to money for an extra 10 years? Nothing. It's ribbis. You're not allowed to do it. But we're saying the market. If the market speaks, how much would the, you know, what would the market value and what's the interest rate? And hanging on to money for 10 years. That's what you're willing to pay. You're willing to pay that when I buy a house, when I bought a house with a, let's say I take a 15-year mortgage, I'm borrowing, let's say, $300,000 from the bank, and I'm going to end up paying over the course of the loan of the 15 years $500,000 in payments. Because having that $300,000 today and being able to hang on to it over the next 15 years is worth an additional $200,000 to me. Right? Simple concepts? Yeah, simple mathematical concepts. Good? Let me ask you something. If I borrow money from you today, and you come back to me in 2 years from now asking for that money back, what would I tell you? What would I tell you? I don't have to pay you back. Why not? Shemitah was in between now and 2 years from now. I certainly don't have to pay you back. What's the value of having money for 10 years versus having it for... What's the value of having to pay back in 10 years from now versus having to pay back right now? L'chora, in every 10 years, not l'chora, for sure, in every 10 years, you have at least one Shemitah year. By saying that I only owe it in 10 years from now, it's the equivalent of saying, I don't owe it at all. I'm never going to owe it. Because Shemitah year is going to come in between now and then. No? So what's our Mishnah saying? Our Mishnah is saying we evaluate the difference between how much it's worth, the difference between paying back right now and paying back in 10 years from now. It should be worth the whole thing. Because if I have to pay back in 10 years from now, I don't have to pay back anything. And if I have to pay back now, I have to pay back everything. So it's worth the whole 1,000 zuz. But the Mishnah assumes that it's not worth the whole thing. So what's the Mishnah assuming? Clearly, that the Shemitah is not going to cancel the loan for some reason. The question is, what's that reason? Why is Shemitah not going to cancel this loan? There are two possibilities. What's that? What? If you write a prosbul, right? You do a workaround of the Shemitah, and there are two ways midoraisa to work around the Shemitah, and one way midrabana. So Sammy suggested the way midrabana, which is the most well-known way of prosbul, of writing a prosbul. But there are two ways midoraisa to work around the halachas of Shemitah. One is malva lamashkon, make collateral. And the other is moser shtoros of the Beis Din, where you say, I'm not going to collect money. The issue is, he goes, I'm not allowed to press him to give me the money. I'm going to give the shtoros to Beis Din. Beis Din will collect the money for me. Those are the two ways midoraisa to get around Shemitah. So that's one way that our Mishnah might be talking about. Maybe our Mishnah is talking about B'chia Gavna, that the 10-year loan involves a Moser Shtros of the Beis Din, or involves Malva Lamashkon, or involves a Prusbul, Midrabanon Prusbul.
Can the person, meaning, who's the Isra on to continue a loan with the Isra on the person who's letting money himself, so you can both.
Very, it's definitely a person in Israel, the person who wants his money back, the lender. It may also be, we have to discuss whether it's an Israel on the borrower also to pay it back. So yes, he can be, yeah.
Isra is only Jew to Jew, or
Jew
to Guy, or
Jew to Jew. Yeah. The big discussion in the Achronim about Shemitah, which we're going to have to see, it's really a discussion we've shown, but the Achronim make a huge deal about it, is this a din in dinim mamonis, or is this a din in nisr v'hetim? What do I mean by that? If 10 years from now, the Shemitah passes, and you, Shemitah comes and goes, and you haven't paid me back, is the issue that I'm not allowed to ask you for the money back, but really, really, in Dinei Mamnas, you still owe me the money? I just have a requirement that I have to be mochel. I'm not allowed to ask it for you. I have a chiyuv to be mochel. Or is it, no, it's not just that I'm not allowed to ask for it back. It's that the Torah says you don't owe it to me anymore. So again, first way of understanding it is, that you do owe it to me, but I have a chiv d'oraisa to be mochel so that you won't owe it. But until I'm mochel, if I'm a Rasha and I don't want to be mochel, well then you still owe me the money. Where the other way of understanding it is, no, it's afka'asa d'malka. The Torah itself is mafkiya the chov. The Torah itself says that there is no loan, that you don't owe the money at all. That we're going to have to get into. One second. So our Mishnah is talking about a case where 10 years later the money is still owed. There are two ways that could happen. Either that could happen because you worked around Shemitah. You did some way to get out of the halachas of Shemitah, such as Malva Lamashkon, such as Moshe Shos of the Beis Din. The other possibility is that maybe the laws of Shemitah don't apply when you make a 10-year loan. Because the very words, 10-year loan, assumes that there's going to be a Shemitah there. And still we're calling it a 10-year loan. So maybe for some reason, there's something in the Torah that would tell us that the laws of Shemitah don't apply to a long-term loan. Huge nafkaminas. People take mortgages all the time. Is it necessary for a bank to write a principal? Forget about the heterisk or whatever, all the ribbis issues. But is it necessary to write a principal on something like that? For a long-term loan? So this is the discussion in our Gemara. It doesn't happen in exactly that way, but it's essentially a discussion in the Gemara. The Gemara starts from the opposite end. The Gemara starts by talking about, does a 10-year loan get cancelled by Shemitah or not? And there are two versions of Rabbi Dam Shmuel. Version number one, on the bottom of Gimel Amaral, two lines on the bottom, Amar Rabbi Dam Shmuel, Amal Vez Chaver Les Shanim, Shviyis Misham Taso, that Shemitah does cancel a 10-year loan, even though right now he can't ask for his money back, he eventually will be able to ask for his money back, and therefore Shemitah cancels the loan. The Gemara says, well, wait a second. Our Mishnah makes it sound like Shemitah didn't cancel the loan because you still owe it 10 years from now. So isn't our Mishnah a kasha on that? Where it says, no, maybe our Mishnah was talking about Malva Lamashkon, Moshe Shoslo Beis Din. He had some other way to work around Shemitah. Second version of Rabbi Dam Shmuel is on Gimel Amud Beis, about 15 lines into the page. Ve'omer Rabbi Dam Shmuel. I'm sorry. No, that's not the second version. Ika da Amri, Amr Rabbi Dam Shmuel, about 8 lines into the page. Ika da Amri, Amar Rabbi Dam Shmuel, Hamalves Chaver Leser Shanim, Ein Shviyas Misham Taso. If a person lends money for 10 years, Shemitah does not cancel it. Says the Gemara, oh, our Mishnah's a raya to that, because our Mishnah says 10 years later the money's still owed. Well, no, the Mishnah's not a raya either, because the Mishnah might be talking about where there was some other way to work around Shemitah. So our Gemara focuses primarily on long-term loans. But another couple of interesting things come up in the context of that discussion. First of all, when we talk about how our Mishnah might be talking about Malval Mashkon, Moser Shtros of the Beis Din. So I mentioned to you before that Moser Shtros of the Beis Din and Malval Mashkon are two ways Mida Oraisa to get around Shemitah. Shemitah's Ksafim. What's the way Mida Rabbanan to get around Shemitah's Ksafim? Prusbul. So it sounds like Moshe Shtros of the Beis Din is somewhat different than Prusbul. If you look at Rashi in the first skinny line, Moshe Shtros of the Beis Din, who Prusbul? Shehiskin Hillel. Moshe Shtros of the Beis Din is Prusbul, that Hillel is Misakin. So Rashi tells you, Shekosov Bo, where you write in this document, Mosarni Lechem Ploni Yeploni Adayanin, I give you, sir and sir, the judges, and sir, there should be three, Shabmakum ploni, in a certain place, Shekolchov Sheyeshli Shaagvenu Kozman Sheerza. That any chov that I have, anyone that owes me money, that we can collect it whenever I want. So the principal basically takes the loan that's in your hands and puts it in the hands of the Beis Din. Shemitah is not Meshamit for a Beis Din. The Beis Din can still collect for whatever reason, whatever the mechanism is, they can still collect. That's Moshe Shtros of the Beis Din. And that's Prusbul, apparently.
Why is that any different than
Gimel Shar or the Beis Din? Oh, so that's the kasha. So Rashi over here says, it's the same. It is Prusbul. There's no difference. Which, of course, begs the question, what was Hillel Misakin then? The Gemara says Hillel is masakin prusbul. What do you mean? You can't. It's like saying, I was masakin basar b'chalav because I said you're not allowed to cook milk and meat together. Well, no, I'm not masakin it. The Torah said it already. Hillel can't be masakin something that's already in the Torah. The Torah said it already. So we're going to have to get to that as well. But I think in order to do the sugya properly, it's a good idea to start the sugya from the beginning. The sugya of Shemitah's Ksafim in general. Not just as it appears in our Gemara, but as it appears in the Torah, and go through some of the basic sources in Talmud Bavli on Shemitah's Ksafim. I just left my Mar Mekomos in my bag. So it starts obviously with Chumash. It starts with Pesukim in Chumash. So let's go carefully through these Pesukim and tell me how many mitzvos do you see over here? It's always fun to do that. It's interesting to do that. To go through Pesukim in Chumash, count the mitzvos. How many things is that mitzvos asay and los asay, is the Torah telling you? If you were to actually go through Chumash blindly doing that without opening up a sefer mitzvos at all, just going through the Chumash, counting how many things is the Torah telling me you should do, how many things is the Torah telling me not to do, you will end up with a lot more than 613 mitzvos. That's why the Rambam needed rules of what counts as a mitzvah and what doesn't count as a mitzvah, because you can go through and you can find tons and tons of mitzvos. Well, let's see the Pesukim. Perek Tesvav in Sefer Dvarim Pesukim Aleph for Gimel. Miketz Sheva Shanim Tas Shemitah. At the end of 7 years, you should have Shemitah. Does that mean anything to us? Not really, because we don't know what Shemitah means. What does it mean, a Shemitah? Does it mean I shouldn't work my land? Does it mean I should, throw a party? What exactly does it mean? Vized Dvar Shemitah. Shemot Kol Balma Sheya Doa Sheya Shebre Ehu. Lo Yigos Esre Ehu Vesachiv. Kikar Shemitah Lashem. Anyone who's owed money by somebody else, do not press him for that money, your friend for that money, because it is a Shemitah la Hashem. What do you have there? Mitzvah say, mitzvah lo say, what do you got? Lo say, what's lo say? Do not charge, do not oppress him, do not push him for the money. Es hanachri tigos, v'asher yelcha esachicha tishamit yedecha. Now what do you have? How many? You got an asay and a los asay in that pasuk? Where's the lo pen al or hishamer? Two asays. Asay number one is what? Right, collect from a guy when he owes you money. And asay number two is? Tishamer diyalcha, let go with your friend. A mitzvah say to let it go. So we had a los asay not to press him, but an asay to let it be. Skipping ahead a little bit, Hishamelcha penya davarim levavcha biliyal. You have any hishamers or pens over there? Yeah, a couple, right? Hishamelcha pen, yeah, davarim levavcha biliyal lemar. Be careful lest you think the following evil thought: Karva shnasa sheva shnasa shmita v'ra'e necha b'achicha evyon v'lo siten lo v'kare lechal Hashem v'yibucha chet. A guy is going to ask you for money now. At the end of Chodesh Elul, the year before Shemitah, and you're going to say, what am I, nuts? It's a Shemitah year coming. I'm going to lend him money? It's financial suicide if I lend him money before Shemitah. I'm not doing that. And then he's going to cry out to Hashem that he's poor and that no one wants to lend him money and that life isn't fair and that he's suffering. That's bad. That's going to be a sin. So what is that? Asay Adelos Asay? Where's the Asay? Yeah, if you Sharmelecha pen, lest you do this, you better not fail to lend because of the impending Shemitah. That sounds like a Los Asay, no? You better not fail to lend because of Shemitah coming up. And then Pasuk Yud, Nason Titein Lo. Oh, now we have Nason Titein Lo is Asay, go and give him. V'lo yira levavcha b'sid chalo ki b'glal adav rezei yivrach Hashem alkecha b'chol ma'asecha v'chol mishlach yedecha. And don't begrudge him for it, because God gave you blessings for a reason, so that you can share them with other people. And that sounds like los asay. Anyone tallying how many we got? A lot. But we certainly have a mitzvah to a mitzvah saseh to let the loan go, a mitzvah lo saseh to not press him for the money. And in addition to that, we have requirements relating to lending the money in the first place, that you can't not lend the money, you're not allowed to avoid lending the money because of the fact that Shemitah's coming, right? We have all of that in the Chumash. Now, in general, when you have a mitzvah lo saseh, is there a birchas mitzvah and a mitzvah lo saseh? Generally speaking, no. No birchas mitzvah and a mitzvah lo saseh. Mitzvah saseh, generally speaking, birchas mitzvah, yes. The Rashba, famously in the Tshuva and Chelek Aleph Siman Yud Ches, I always mention this Rashba, was asked the question, Sha'ela, Lama in Mavarchon ala mitzvahs kulan kigon amaldas chavero v'atoi nima uchiyotzben. If there is a mitzvah semi daraisa to lend somebody money, there's a mitzvah daraisa to help someone schlep packages. So when you see the old lady crossing the street and she can't carry your packages, why don't you say, Baruch Adash, to help the old lady cross the street carry your packages, and then go carry the packages? Why is there no birchsa mitzvah on that? Why is there no birchsa mitzvah on lending money? So the Rashba writes, Zu she'ela amuka v'davar sha'amdu alav harishonim zatzal. This is a very deep question, and it's something that all the Rishonim discussed. V'nistabchu bo harbe, and they were very confounded by this. Mipnei ma mevarchan al miksasan v'ein mevarchan al kulan. Why do we make a bracha on some of them, but not all of them? V'ezo she mevarchan alav, v'ezo she'en mevarchan alav. Why do we make, which ones do we make a bracha on, which ones don't we make a bracha on? But I can't give you one reason that will explain everything. Ella, kol mitzvah shein b'maisa in mevarchan aleha. Well, number one, any mitzvah that does not involve any action, you don't make a bracha on. And that's why he says, kigon hashmatas ksafim. Why is there no bracha on the mitzvah of letting the loan go? Because there's no action involved. What is involved by letting it go? Just not asking for the money back. And mentally, you know, releasing it. They're not interested in your money back. And therefore, there's no birchsa mitzvah. The Rashi gives like five other rules when we don't make a birchsa mitzvah. When it's not totally kulo biyada osa, it's not totally in your control to get the mitzvah done. The mitzvah of kiddushin, let's say. You want to be mekadesh anisha, but she may not be mekabel the kiddushin. You may think she loves you, but she may not. She may want to run away when you come at her with the ring. So it's not up to you to finish the mitzvah. Good. Lots of other explanations that the Rashba gives. Now, what's the reason? What's the tam ha-mitzvah? What's the tam ha-mitzvah for the mitzvah of Hashmatas Kesafin? So first of all, does it matter what the tam ha-mitzvah is? Why am I even asking that? I mean, Tamei HaMitzvah is something that, generally speaking, won't affect the halacha in any way. But sometimes... What? Could it affect if there's a bracha? I don't think so. Why? If it doesn't, if there's no ma'isa, the Rashba already covered it. There's no ma'isa. The Tamei HaMitzvah is the Torah said so. That's always the real time. But nevertheless, he always gives it, whenever you're learning about a mitzvah, it's always nice to see what the Rishonim said that will give it a little more time, give it a little more taste, a little more flavor. It says Sefer HaChinuch, take a look at Sefer HaChinuch, source number 3. Kvar kasafti b'kesef talve b'mitzvah shvius. He says, I already discussed in the mitzvah of lending money a little bit about the mitzvah of Shemitah's kasafim. A little bit about the reasons for it. Ushmitas ksafim gamkein achar osu atam nimshach. Shmitas ksafim has a lot of the same themes, a lot of the same reasons. Here we go. What are the reasons? L'lamed nafshenu b'midos hamu'ulos midos hanedivos v'ayin tov. What does that mean? L'lamed nafshenu. To teach ourselves. Good. Midos hamulos, midos hanadivus, ayin tov. It's important that a person become a generous person. And this is one way of teaching us to be generous. When you give money to people and don't ask for it back, that's pretty generous. There aren't so many people doing that. So that teaches us to be generous. V'nikva bilvaveinu abitachon agadol b'shem baruch hu. Also, it will establish a certain sense of bitachon in our own hearts. Why will it establish bitachon? How will that help you with your bitachon? Yeah. Normally, it's a very bad business deal to give money and not get anything back. That's not the way to do business. They don't teach you that in business school. So it requires a certain sense of bitachon that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to take care of you. And then we'll see, Hashem is going to give us all the goods. This will also keep us away from stealing and from coveting that which belongs to other people. Why would this keep us away from stealing and coveting that which belongs to other people? Because a person will make a kalvachomer to himself saying, afilu hil visiv mamoni, v'igiyashnasa shmita, even if I would have lent my money, given my money to somebody else in shmita, would come, amra Torah lahashmit biyado amalda, the hamilva, the Torah would say, I have to let him keep it. If I want to know what the Torah thinks about taking other people's possessions, all I need to do is think about the fact that the Torah demands that when I give my money, I have to let him keep it. Kal v'chomer, I'm not allowed to take someone else's money. Why doesn't he just say, if I want to know what the Torah has to say about stealing, I can look in the Torah and it says, don't steal. Shemitah is going to be what teaches you not to steal? You know what? How am I going to know not to covet? How about I look at the Ten Commandments? And I might find that one of those Ten Commandments says, don't covet. I need Shemitah to teach me not to covet?
Morality factor, meaning how do we know it's immoral to steal, right? Meaning people in the history of the whole world, societies, stolen. So keeping the fact that it's a tradition that steals must be that there's a reason that God created it, right? There's a reason the Torah created it. So just the law itself that don't steal, maybe it's not good enough. Meaning you have to have a reason, how to homework, cause of this and this and this. Therefore, it's illogical to steal and make those up.
But is this giving a reason even? It's just telling me that I now know that it's serious because the Torah says I'm not allowed to take someone else's stuff. It's not really giving me a reason not to steal. Unless you say maybe that's the point. I mean, if the Torah says don't steal, don't covet, I would know, okay, those are things you're not supposed to do. But those aren't things that people actually listen to. You know, that's not, it's like Lashon Hara, you know, it's like, these are things there it is. I just said Lashon Hara against the whole Klal Yisrael. That these are things you're not supposed to do, but I didn't think this is something that like is really important. But if you have other mitzvos that go 10 steps further than those mitzvos, then not only you're not allowed to covet, not only you're not allowed to steal, you're not even allowed to let the guy, you're not even allowed to ask for what's rightfully yours back from the guy. Well, then that will tell you something about how important it is to respect other people's property. That's what I think Sefer Chinuch is saying. Al derech Musar, it helps us internalize it. The Baal HaAkeda, the Sefer HaAkeda writes in Parshas Bar, another reason for Shemitah, he says, that a person shouldn't become a slave to his money, that it teaches you to let go of your money. Why is it so important to let go of your money? Because to the extent that you worship your money, you're not worshiping God. Person has to remember where his focus should be in his worship. Rambam writes in Moreh Nevuchim, no, it's a way of taking care of poor people. There are some poor people that won't take your tzedakah, but they'll take a loan from you. And they're not going to listen to you when you say, oh, I forgive the loan, it's okay, it's tzedakah. They don't want tzedakah. But if there's a din in the Torah that says that they don't have to pay you back and that you have to be mochel them, so then they're not a charity case. They're just following the laws of the Torah. So it provides you with an opportunity to give tzedakah in a way that a person is not even going to be embarrassed about the tzedakah, about receiving the money. I will stop there. Bez Hashem, go through this Gemara tomorrow if you haven't gone through it yet, and we'll look at some of the Rishonim over here. Take a look at the Rush, the Tosos, the next few Marmakomas, the Ktsos, a very big Ktsos. Big stuff coming up. Big stuff.
A lot of law eagles apply. So let's say you do a service for someone.